Hello there. I am Chana Rachel Gaffin, your host. Let's talk about weight loss in your 30s, or just nutrition in your 30s, the way you turn 30 and you suddenly realize you're not as thin as you used to be, and your diets don't kick in as fast as they used to. A whole lot of news and new ideas that I never knew about until I spoke with this wonderful woman called Justine Friedman.
Nice to meet you, Hannah.
Nice to meet you too. So Justine Friedman, you are a clinical dietitian for the past almost 24 years, and you work a lot around women's relationships with their bodies, about building a positive relationship. You incorporate latest findings in science and help women find a balance with their day-to-day lifestyle and eating. And the reason I actually approached you was because I am going through I'm post-pregnancy. I'm a new mom and I'm in my 30s, and I've been, struggling with my weight for a very long time. I think it already started in my teens. I had a series of eating disorders in my teens. And one of the hardest things, aside from the beautiful part of becoming a mom, which I love becoming and I love being a mom, one of the harder things that I struggle with is really carrying around more of a mass in weight. I kind of feel like I put on at least 8 kilos more than I started out when I was first married. And I kind of feel like this weight is just lingering. It's kind of just sticking here. And I was just chatting with a friend on Instagram, and I was telling him how I really just want to, feel lighter and get lighter. And he was saying, I just found out that I have diabetes and I can't eat sugar anymore. And I was like, you're not fat, you're thin, And I'm like, you're Adam, you're thin. And he was like, yeah, well, actually I have diabetes now as well. And we're not in our 20s anymore. We're in our 30s now. And then I was like, we're in our 30s now. What does that mean? What does that actually mean?
Right. So it's interesting because I think as women, first of all, if you've had a slightly more challenging relationship with food in your teens, which I think most teenage girls and even some teenage boys go through this, not always being totally satisfied with their body, becoming more aware of their body. And that's really the age where we start testing out dieting, restricting a little bit, eating less, maybe exercising a bit more. And it's so simple and easy if you follow that kind of basic Weight Watchers way less plan when you're in your teen years, that you drop weight like this and you feel good. Unfortunately for some teenagers, and this is an experience that I had, my first diet triggered this fear of restriction and led me to overeating as a result. So it can also send you on that pathway. But as a teenager, it's really a time of playing around, of trying to get to know who you are. And in your 20s, again, it becomes, if you have a better relationship with food, it's easy to maintain your weight. You're more active, your metabolism is a lot healthier, more robust. And the minute that you start having kids and your hormone levels slowly start changing, then it becomes a little bit more challenging every single time. And in your 30s, what starts happening, especially if you've had multiple pregnancies or you've had your first pregnancy and your hormones have changed and they haven't quite settled, for some women, it can take almost a year for hormones to settle after a pregnancy. So I'm not sure how old your child is now, how far
seven
after
months.
The pregnancy. 7 months. So it can take sometimes, up to 9 months in order for your body to feel settled. Perhaps you're still breastfeeding. That also changes hormone levels. So there's so much that changes sleep deprivation, change in lifestyle. There's so many other factors. And what we find happening is that as we go in through our 30s and then 40s and 50s, I know you're not there yet, but I'm in my 40s and I deal a
you
lot
look
with
great.
Women. Thank you. Okay, so what we see is that metabolism slows down, but also hormones change. And I think this is something that a lot of women don't realize. And if you are in your 30s and can already start supporting your body, you will be so much better off when you go through the natural changes that happen in your 40s and 50s. So let me give you a little bit of a background with that. So in your 20s and 30s, generally what happens is that you have a fairly regular cycle. And what I mean by a regular cycle for women, it doesn't have to be every 28 days. There's some women that have a regular cycle of every 5 weeks or every 2 months. It doesn't necessarily have to be like that 28 days on the nose. And generally your progesterone levels, your estrogen levels cycle throughout the month, which is completely normal, which allows for your body to release an egg in the hope that you're going to fall pregnant. If there's no fertilization, then your estrogen level drops and you have a period and the lining of your uterus sheds, and then the whole process starts up again. When you get to your mid-30s, progesterone, which is one of the hormones that they generally test when you first pregnant to see if it's high enough to sustain the pregnancy, slowly starts dropping off. And it's like this gradual decline of this hormone from your mid-30s onwards until eventually you enter into menopause. What happens from your later 30s, early 40s onwards is estrogen, which is the hormone that we normally associate more with being a woman, starts to go on a roller coaster ride. And instead of following a normal pattern from month to month, some months it can be higher, some months it can be lower. And also the dance and the play between the estrogen and progesterone also starts changing. So if progesterone becomes much, much lower and estrogen becomes much higher, we have a condition called estrogen dominance that happens. And there's symptoms that come with that. So generally what women start finding is that as they get into their mid-30s, it becomes a little bit more difficult to lose the weight that they would normally have done really easily in their teens or in their 20s. And it can become quite frustrating. You think, well, hold on. I'm trying to eat well. Maybe I'm even exercising better than I have, or I'm being more dedicated to it, but things aren't really shifting, or it's happening a lot slower. And then frustration creeps in where we want to see results. Another colleague of mine, and I always joke about that little black dress that's sitting in your cupboard that you always want to get back into.
Oh my gosh. I totally have one of those.
Do you have a black
dress? Green. It's green, but it's been sitting there for the past 7 years. Yes.
Wow. Okay. All right. So I think one of the most important things for women in this age to understand is to learn about the changes that are naturally going to happen in their bodies. And with that knowledge, be able to adapt their eating and their lifestyle according to that. So food choices can differ from person to person. And when I meet with someone for the first time, I take a full history, which includes understanding what their sleep habits are like, their exercise, their stress, their emotions, as well as their food choices and any medical history that they may have. No two people ever get the same kind of plan from me, because what one person needs, somebody else may definitely not need. And what one person enjoys, somebody else may not enjoy. But there are a few common denominators that I always try and give my clients in order to create the best balance. You speak about balance when it comes to nutrition. For me, that's key. And the three things are keeping balanced blood sugar levels. Okay. Preventing your blood sugar level from spiking or going up too high after a meal. The other thing is stress. And the third thing is sleep habits.
Yes.
Right. And with a newborn baby, or maybe your baby's starting to teethe as well, that can also affect sleeping, right? Yes. So when we don't get enough quality sleep at night, it adds extra stress to the body. And I'm not sure if you ever find that a day after you've had a more restless night's sleep that you're more hungry.
That's actually a really good question. You're right. I think when I don't get enough sleep, I do kind of graze more, and especially, yeah. And also when I'm really busy, I find myself just grazing more. Like instead of sitting down for a proper meal, I'll just like eat whatever I see.
Right. And that grazing, interestingly enough, doesn't give the good bacteria in our gut the opportunity to rest. And certain hormones, certain neurotransmitters, that things like serotonin and dopamine, which help us to feel good and positive, need to be produced with certain gut bacteria. So if we're grazing throughout the day, we don't give our gut the ability to rest in between and increase the number of certain of those better bacteria that would then produce more of those hormones. Right. The other thing with grazing, especially when your energy is low, is if you're constantly looking for foods that are going to boost your energy, I'm just wondering what foods you, if you're happy to share, are choosing. Sure. At those, you know, at those times, because it may give you quick energy, but then it may drop your energy again afterwards.
So what I find myself grazing on very often is like in the morning, I have like breakfast bars that I made. So like I'll see them and like I'll just like eat it right before I leave the house. Or in the afternoon after I pick up my son from daycare, I end up doing a lot of roasting and like baking fruits for him. Like I put just a whole bunch of fruits and like vegetables also in the oven. And then I find myself like eating with him, you know, instead of just like giving him his food and having my meals. It's like I'll sit down and I'll feed him and I'll be like, oh, look, Ema's eating it. You should also eat it. And so then like I find myself like eating just whenever the food is really accessible and not at set times. And I do know that it, like, although the foods may be healthy, I do know how important it is to let your gut rest. Like my friend just told me on Shabbos how she lost like 20 kilos just by having those breaks in between meals. If she would eat whatever she wants. Wow. At set times and leaving 3 hours in between for her body to digest. And like, and it makes sense. Right. To me, it makes sense that your body does need that resting time.
So the resting time is important, but the other thing that I also try and emphasize is also being able to listen to your body. If you actually are very hungry in between those 3 hours, you know, ignoring your body and saying, well, I can't eat because the clock doesn't say it's the right time, that's also not healthy for our relationship with food. So it's equally important to have the space to be able to give your body the opportunity to digest that food and for your gut to rest. But it's also important that you're tuning into your body and you're not watching the clock to tell you when the right time is to eat.
Right, right. I hear that. So I just kind of want to like backtrack. So we were speaking about the four keys, and I just want to go back a little bit to the sleep thing. So you really are right. Like right now, my son is going through like teething and he's like really, he's staying up at night and I don't get as much sleep. And so what is like the ideal sleep, amount of sleep for adults at night?
Okay, so it's interesting because the studies, you know, this I always like to look from a scientific point of view. Obviously, it doesn't always apply to each person as an individual, and you need to see also what is right for you. But the average they speak about is between 7 and 9 hours. Yeah. Less than 7 hours is too stressful for the body, and more than 9 hours also affects you metabolically. So somebody who's sleeping 12 hours a night may actually not be giving their body, you know, enough metabolic activity. So that magic number 7 to 9 is what we aim for. It's interesting. I was having this conversation with my daughter and a friend in the car yesterday. She was saying one of her friends at school only sleeps 2 hours a night. I said, oh, I could never do that. And she knows, I think I go to bed even earlier than my kids. Wow. I need, my magic number is anywhere between 8 and 9 hours. Nine. Wow. Hours, I'm ready.
Oh my gosh.
And it's
how many hours did you sleep last night?
Good question. Last night was 8 hours.
Oh, last night was 8 hours. Wow.
And I can, wow. You can, yeah, well, I don't have young kids at home. If anything, my kids are older and I try not to hear them making a noise while I'm trying to sleep.
It's the other way around. They need to put you to bed.
Right. So why is the sleep so important? Because while you are sleeping, your body is able to do all the activities that it needs in recovery. So the vagus nerve that I spoke about right in the beginning, that is the time that your vagus nerve can take over, because you are not in stress mode. You are not in fight and flight mode. So your heart rate comes down and your breathing normalizes and your blood flow is different. There's so many things that happen while we're sleeping. Our brain activity changes and all of the cell repair needs to happen also while we're sleeping at night. Our liver starts detoxifying more. So when we don't get enough sleep, we are, our memory is affected the next day, our brain fog is worse, our stress levels are higher. It's possible that our blood pressure can go up.
Right.
As we mentioned, also like grazing, our appetite can go up. And what that then does is it causes dysregulation of our blood sugar as well.
I see. So it's almost like what you're saying is a good night's sleep could actually contribute to your diet.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Without a doubt.
So our problem is that, you know, having like a full-time, my husband has a full-time job and then, you know, he gets home late and then we put the baby to sleep and then the time passes so fast that we rarely have any time with each other. And then like, I don't know, we'll have maybe like 2-3 hours. And if we're going to go to sleep on time to get those 8 hours of sleep, we really only have like 2 hours of quality time together. And that makes me wonder, like, maybe it really is about condensing your time to make sure that when you are together, you're having like real quality time and staying like strict to, okay, now is bedtime. We're getting into PJs and we're going to sleep.
Right. You know what? I think it's also so much more beneficial for your relationship to have that as well, because when you are not well rested, it affects your mood. And maybe you're going to be more irritable with one another if you haven't had as much sleep, you know, and then that has a knock-on effect to the quality time that you are ending up spending with each other.
Right.
Plus, if your mood is, you know, men have a much more stable hormone system than women do.
Yeah.
So for them, they can be more consistent from day to day, unless there are other pressures that affect them or if they are more of an anxious or depressed type of person. But as women, first of all, our hormone fluctuations during the month can also affect our mood, can affect our interaction with our husband. So being able to have a better night's sleep makes us feel better about ourselves as well, has an impact on the food choices that we're going to make the next day, which also helps us to feel better about ourselves. You know, if you're promising yourself that you want to take care of yourself, you want to make more nourishing food choices, but then you're really exhausted and you keep finding yourself reaching for foods that maybe give you a quick boost of energy, but that actually don't do anything for your mood or for your irritability, then that also has an impact on your relationship with not only with yourself, but with your spouse as well.
Right. It really is all connected. So I think it's really just finding a balance with the sleep that helps the stress, that helps the blood sugar, that helps all of that. I want to actually go back a little bit to this dance between the estrogen and the progesterone. So you're saying that when you get older and you're mid-30s and you get pregnant and they check the progesterone in your body, it's lower than normal because it starts lowering towards menopause. And then with the women's hormones of estrogen, that it's like a dance. And then once you start getting older, it just becomes harder because of that dance.
Correct. So it's interesting. So estrogen is the hormone, like when it's in the right balance, it helps also from a metabolic point of view. Also, your ovaries are responsible. There are a few different places in your body that you can produce estrogen. The ovaries are the predominant place that your body wants estrogen from because of the type of estrogen that it's produced there. And as you age, slowly your ovaries start going smaller and the amount of estrogen that your ovaries produce becomes less and less. So there are two other areas in your body that take over the production of estrogen. The one is something called the adrenal glands, and the second is your fat cells. So your extra stored fat in your body. When you are getting older, your ovaries are producing less estrogen, and you happen to be stressed, then your body is more reliant on your fat cells for estrogen production. So it will more naturally gain weight. Your body wants to store more fat as you become older in order to increase the amount of estrogen that your body is producing to balance out the fact that your ovaries are no longer producing as much estrogen as they were before. And the reason I say that stress plays a role is because, as I said, your adrenal glands are another place in your body that is responsible for producing estrogen. And if you are very stressed, your adrenal glands are more involved in cortisol production, adrenaline production, in order to keep you in that fight, flight, freeze mode. And therefore, your body starts relying more on your fat cells. So we find at a time where people are more stressed and becoming older, that they tend to then also naturally gain more weight, because your body as woman needs the extra fat cells in order to produce the estrogen. There's also a role that blood sugar plays with that as well, which is, I'm happy to discuss that if that's something that you're interested in hearing about as well.
Maybe we'll save that for another time, but I wanted to actually know, so you're saying your body produces more estrogen and something about the fat cells related to it.
I want to understand
a little bit more.
Okay, so as we age, our ovaries slowly stop producing as much estrogen as they did in our teenage years.
What is estrogen for? It's the female hormones?
That's the female hormone, yes. And it has receptors on almost every single part of the body, on the brain, on our muscles, skin, you name it, heart. So as estrogen dips, this is why women who are in perimenopause and menopause start having symptoms like, first of all, hot flashes and night sweats, because it affects our temperature in our body. Mm. One thing I experience, I'm in perimenopause, is joint pain. So it increases inflammation when you have less estrogen. Your skin becomes more dry. Your skin becomes less supple. Brain fog is something else, because estrogen affects the brain. You start losing words and you forget things and you think, oh my gosh.
Pregnancy brain. That's what I call it.
Yes, it's exactly. And that is pregnancy brain. It's like the same thing that has started happening in perimenopause and menopause because of the drops in estrogen levels. Your estrogen is a very wonderful hormone for the body, but we also need it to be in balance, because when it's too high, that is also problematic. So then we start running the risk of things like, if you have the genetic predisposition to it, like estrogen positive cancers. So too much estrogen is a problem. Too little estrogen is a problem. It's like, I call it the Goldilocks effect. It's too hot, it's too cold. We need it to be the right temperature. With estrogen, the same thing applies. Right.
Okay, so all we need to do really is just to deep breathing and just relax and lower the estrogen, lower the fat cells, and get more sleep. And yeah, I think that's really the solution.
Right. And the other thing, the other missing link with that is also just keeping your blood sugar levels as balanced as possible. So making sure, this does not mean that you have to avoid carbohydrates. I think that's what's something that most people are like, okay, stop eating carbs, stop eating fruits because of the fear of increased blood sugar level. It's about knowing how to include whole grain carbohydrates, wholesome fruits and vegetables in your normal eating habits, but balancing them out with lean proteins and vegetables and salads and your healthy fats in order to be able to keep your blood sugar level as stable as possible. Because when your blood sugar level is out of whack, that is another thing that then stresses the body out.
Right. Would you say that in your 30s, your body doesn't need as much food?
you know, everyone is different. So maybe in general, perhaps we don't need quite as much. But that's really genetically, you know, determined. Everyone has their own, you know, amount that they need. And it also depends on their activity level. If you're doing a lot of exercise and you're doing a lot more like endurance exercise or even weight training, you may find that your appetite goes up, but then probably your metabolism is going up with that as well.
Yeah, I think that is definitely true. What is your one tip for a person who really has been struggling with like a self-image with weight for their whole life? Like, how do you break the cycle to reach a positive relationship with your body?
Okay, so this is probably going to sound counterintuitive, but my advice is stop dieting and stop weighing yourself. When we believe that diets are the only way to feel good about ourselves and constantly weighing ourselves is the only way for us to be in control and keep ourselves on track, it can lead to a much worse relationship with food and with our body. So learning what your unique body needs, understanding how foods work, and getting proper quality advice from a professional, for me, that's important. Calorie counting is something that I don't encourage either, because if you're eating less than what your body needs, you're setting yourself up for that restriction, feeling deprived, and then ending up overeating or binge eating as a result because you can't maintain it. And what ends up happening with a lot of the women that I work with is that they have been dieting for so many years and they end up feeling so depleted from it and frustrated by it and having this negative relationship with food because they are making promises to themselves that they can't keep. So where, if you're doing something, if you're trying a diet or restrictive program, which leads you to make promises to yourself that you can't keep, that then causes you to feel guilty about eating, shameful when you eat foods that you think are bad for you, then that is where you are making the relationship with food and your body way worse. I encourage my clients to look at their clothes as a measure of how they feel about themselves. I really think that you stop into restriction and deprivation and constantly checking your weight on the scale. Look, for some people that really does work. And I'm not saying that that's not a method that works. You know, that's why the dieting industry is a multi-billion dollar industry. But the problem is that those kind of ways of going about managing weight, first of all, are not sustainable. And every time you lose weight in a very quick and drastic way and restrictive way, you have the potential to gain it back plus afterwards. And those kind of restrictive diets actually slow your metabolism down. So as women in their 30s who want to still feel good in their body in their 40s and their 50s, it is the perfect time to learn what is ideal, what is the most balanced way of approaching eating, because the last thing you, even though you may want to lose all of that weight like this and fit into your green dress in your cupboard as soon as possible, when you are doing things too drastically and restrictively, it may work for now. But when you're in your 40s and your 50s, it's going to mean a slower metabolism. And that is where you pay the price for it. Plus, you may be ruining your relationship with your body and food at the same time. So I really do encourage, for me, it's, yes, I hear that for a lot of women, they just want to get the results and they're tired of feeling uncomfortable in their bodies and they just want to feel like themselves again, or they want to aspire to looking a certain way. Right. But putting in the effort for and creating a sustainable approach that will last them not only for the immediate time that they're trying to get that result, but really for the rest of their lives, you're investing in yourself and in a relationship with food and your body that will only be more positive if you go about it from a different way.
Yeah, it was really interesting. Mikhail Abulafia, he's a very famous psychologist and speaker in Israel. He just like went on YouTube and I found he had a lecture that he gave like a few years ago about stress. And he said that one of the best things to really fight off stress is, especially with your food, to eat as many natural foods as you can. And he said that when you eat your food, you're supposed to think positive thoughts and to just like really like take like breaths in between each bite to like really like slow down the process, and that will also impact stress as well.
Absolutely. I love that. And it's something that I do with my clients, and I also try and do with like for myself. If you are going to eat something that you really love, but now you've been told that it's bad for you or you shouldn't be eating it, and you eat it quickly and feel guilty and shameful about it at the same
Right.
time, what's the point?
Right.
Like I say to my clients, if you're going to eat that piece of chocolate cake and that's really what you want, take a slice that you know you're going to be satisfied with. Put it on your plate in front of you. Look at it, smell it, admire it. If you are a Jewish woman that says brachot, say a bracha over it, because then we're bringing Hashem into it and you're bringing your neshama into it as well. Take
right.
a bite and savor it. As you said, breathe with it. Food that you enjoy and that you eat in a more mindful and respectful way, not only for food, but for your body as well. Of course, it's going to always be more beneficial for you. And then you've got the positive effect of feeling like you are enjoying the pleasures of food, because Hashem also created food and to taste good and gave us taste buds so that we would be encouraged to eat. Otherwise, no one would ever eat and we'd probably die.
That's so true. It's so true. Food is really here also to enjoy. And I definitely have to say I definitely breathe joy off of it. How are you different from most of the other dietitians out there? What do you think is your specialty?
So, first of all, I've had my own food challenges. As a teenager, I alluded in the beginning, I had a very difficult relationship with food in my body. I've done the dieting restriction, overeating, terrible relationship, making promises to myself, breaking promises to myself. And I've spent a lot of time working on the psychology of food and the psychology of building a good relationship with myself and with my body. So I really understand when women come to me with these struggles. It's not, you know, I'm coming from a much more, not only empathetic place, but a real understanding of what it can be like to have this kind of challenging relationship. Because I am so passionate also about learning, I am always up to date with the latest research. And I enjoy applying that to each person. I like to see people as a combination of a number of different things. Not only I'm here because I want to lose weight, but let's look at every aspect of your life. So for me, the looking at somebody as a whole person in that holistic way is also very important. And sometimes it's like a piece of a puzzle that we have to put together. And for me, in my consultations with clients, I don't only focus on how they are nourishing their bodies, but how they are balancing the rest of their life as well. So a lot of my appointments actually are speaking more about their emotional state of mind, how they're managing stress, how they are able to implement what I'm giving them into their lifestyle, because I can create the most perfect plan for somebody. But if it's not practical for them and they can't implement it in their life, then it's not worth anything. So I really, for me, I pride myself on being able to meet the person where they're at and give them the best advice for them. No two plans I ever create are identical. And I really do invest a lot of time in creating what I do for my clients, and then spending the time with them both in consultation and in between consultation for the support that they need as well. So I really do. For me, it's I love what I do. When I see my clients having those aha moments, especially about understanding their body, their relationship with food, and finding it so easy to implement what I give them, then I know I'm doing my job well.
That sounds incredible. It sounds so satisfying. And I really appreciate your time today coming here and being here with me. I'm sure so many more women are going to benefit from what you've spoken. And if anyone wants to find you, Justine, how can they?
So my website's probably the easiest to get hold of me, which is justinefriedman.com. So you'll see my name on the Zoom. I'm not sure if this will be an audio or video, but Justine Friedman, spelled Friedman. Mm-hmm. And I am also on Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn as well. So you're more than welcome to get hold of me on any of those platforms. And I'd be happy to speak with anybody. I always offer a 15-minute complimentary call to start. So you can always discuss with me exactly what your challenges happen to be, and I'll guide you in the right direction. And I'll be very quick to say, you know, if you're not the right person and there's somebody else I know who would be a better fit, I'm happy to pass you on. But I think that's another thing that's important to me. I think the chemistry between who I work with needs to be right as well, that we well matched, and that I can provide the best support for my clients possible.
Yeah, that's very true. Amazing. So thank you so much. I really appreciate your time, and I'm looking forward to hearing more updates.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. I really appreciate speaking with you today.
Wow, I never realized that just going to sleep on time can do so much, just as lower your stress levels and help you lose weight. I'm looking forward to learning more about this topic. I hope you enjoyed, and thanks for listening.